This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
What is going on, everybody? Dan Grasso sitting in for Chris once again here on 98.7 ESPN. 800-919-3776. That is our telephone number. Brian Mungia, Michael Eshmagoon, keeping us company as well. On this Wednesday evening, we're taking it right up until 9 o'clock tonight. Then you got yourself game number 4 of the NBA Finals on your home for the NBA Finals right here on 98.7 ESPN. And a big game, certainly, for both of these teams in this series. Milwaukee seeing if they can defend their home court once again and build off of that impressive victory they had back on Sunday night and even this bad boy up at 2 games apiece and make it a best 2 out of 3. Or Phoenix, on the other hand, can really take a stranglehold of this series, go up 3 games to 1, and then head back to the desert with a chance to wrap this series up, which I guess Game 5 will be on Saturday night there in Phoenix. So big one later on this evening. You'll hear every bounce of the ball right here on 98.7 ESPN. We'll break it down for you a little bit later on, give you some preview, give you some thoughts of what we can expect to see. We'll also have the latest here when it comes to the Jets and Marcus May. Talked a little bit about it yesterday, the deadline fast approaching between the green or for the green and white to see if they can get their star safety under contract to a long-term deal, or he's going to have to play out the season on the franchise tender. We talked about that yesterday. We will dive deeper into the Mets and Yankees because, hey, second half of the baseball season starts tomorrow night, if you can believe it. Yanks and Sox, the only game on the schedule out in the Bronx, and really no other way around it. I mean, that is the beginning of really the next 2-week evaluation period for this Yankee baseball team, where we're going to find out, are they in or are they out? Is the front office going to go out there and add to what they have already, or are they essentially just going to remain status quo, or maybe even sellers heading up to July 30th and the trade deadline? You got a lot of games with the Red Sox. You got a series with the Tampa Bay Rays mixed in there as well. So we're going to know about the balance of this Yankee season by the time we get to July 30th, and it all starts in earnest tomorrow. We'll look back on the team's first half. We'll also do the same with the New York Mets. Anthony DeComo of MLB.com is going to join me a little bit later on to talk about the Amazons. We'll break down where things stand for both of the teams, give you a little first half awards, have some fun with all that stuff, and plus a little bit of rumor mill action involving the New York Knickerbockers about maybe, just maybe, adding to their backcourt for the upcoming season. We'll talk all about that as we move forward here till 9 o'clock. And as always, you can get me on Twitter at Dan Grasso, G-R-A-C-A, is where you can find me there. Now, real quick, let's start with the All-Star game just to put a bow on the festivities there from the last few days in Colorado. You know, the final score was what the final score was, right? The American League wins it again for the 8th consecutive season. And I got to be fully honest with you. You know, when they said that at the end of the night, that this is the 8th straight year that the American League has won the All-Star game, I mean, that was news to me. I mean, I couldn't have told you that. I mean, I had a hard enough time remembering, you know, who was winning the All-Star games even when they counted for home field in the World Series, which was ridiculous. But I think all in all, they put on a good show last night. You know, it was a competitive game. You saw the guys out there trying, and that's what I keep saying about the baseball All-Star game. You know, you can criticize it, you can try to poke holes through it all you want, but the bottom line is it's the best All-Star game that we have out of any of the four, because in its true essence, it's still the game, I think, closer than any of those other sports. It still feels like you're watching an actual baseball game with the guys going out there, you know, when they're throwing high 90s on the mound, when you got these guys in the batter's box hitting rockets back to the pitcher, you know, as you saw there with Vlad Jr. and Max Scherzer early on in this game. I mean, these guys are trying. You know, they want to go out there. They want to win. And, you know, as far as the locals are concerned, Aaron Judge started for the American League team. You know, he got a walk, scored a run among his achievements there on the night. Colin Chapman didn't see the mound at all for the Yankees, and if you're a Yankee fan, you know what, you don't be bothered by that anyways, because less risk for injury when it's all said and done there. And then Taijuan Walker gave up a home run to Mike Zunino of the American League in his one inning of work, but you know what, it's small potatoes. You know, everybody got out of it in one piece. Certainly that's the name of the game here when you're talking about the All-Star game and what it means to everybody involved there. Vlad Jr., congrats to him. He wins the All-Star Game MVP Award. Probably not going to be the last time you're going to see him in the Midsummer Classic. Obviously, he's one of the best players in this game. And you saw that home run that he hit. I mean, it absolutely just took off out of that stadium. And, you know, it would have been nice to see him in the home run derby on Monday night going up against Pete Alonso for the second consecutive derby. Because remember, the derby in 19 came down to Pete and Vlad Jr. And Vlad decided he wanted any part of it this year, but you know that that guy can rake, and you know he's going to hit many, many more important home runs and have more big hits for this Blue Jays team as they try to make a push to the playoffs here at the end of 2021, and you know maybe being a thorn in the Yankee side. That's a guy you're going to have to get used to seeing if you're a Yankee fan. I mean, that's the bottom line. He's not going anywhere. Not going anywhere at all. I got to be honest with you. I didn't really love, and this isn't the first time that they've done it. I didn't necessarily love the players mic'd up on the field, you know, because that kind of, and I know that it's an exhibition, but when the guys are mic'd up and, you know, I felt bad for Joe Buck. I mean, Joe Buck's sitting there having to, you know, constantly agitate these guys and annoy these guys. Like, I was thinking about it, if that was me, like, they're out there, the game is hard enough to play on your own. And when you step into the batter's box, like Nelson Cruz was mic'd up when he was in the batter's box. Fernando Tatis was mic'd up when he was in the batter's box. Like, it's hard enough to just sit there when nobody's talking to you and try to get a piece of the action and try to, you know, make contact and try to hit the ball and all those things. You know, that's difficult. And then meantime, you got Joe Buck talking your ear off. And look, it's television. He wants an answer. All of those things. And, you know, you want to be a nice guy. You don't want to blow him off and all those type of things there. But that I could have did without. Even the guys who weren't up to bat, you know, even Liam Hendricks in the ninth inning, and somebody should have told him that he was mic'd up and it was live, because I guess they had to bleep out a lot of things that was coming out of the White Sox closer's mouth. I don't know. That to me was kind of hokey, to be honest with you. Like, if we never see the guys mic'd up again in an All-Star game, I'd be cool with that. I really would. And lastly, you know, it's something that you knew was coming. I mean, we talked about it here. I've been tweeting it out since I first got word about it. The last thing that they should be doing here is messing around with these uniforms, right? And I get why, because there's a dollar to be made, right? Major League Baseball's got a billion-dollar contract with Nike. They turn things over to Nike, and they let them design these new All-Star uniforms, which completely just zaps any sort of individuality and any sort of whatever recognition that you would give to these All-Stars by making this game. You know, you want to single the players out. You want them to stand out. You want somebody to turn on the game and turn on the TV and see, oh, here's so-and-so. He plays for, you know, Chicago. So then maybe when you want to watch that player again, you put on a Chicago game or something in the second half of the season or down the road, and now you know what that guy looks like in his uniform because you saw him in the All-Star game. But everybody was looking exactly the same last night. And it was an eyesore, and it got ripped on social media, as it should have. It was a joke. You know what the American League looked like with the navy blue uniforms? The American League looked like if the Cub Scouts had a baseball team. That's the uniforms that they would wear. It looked like the National League was playing the Cub Scouts. And I don't know how good the Cub Scouts are when it comes to baseball. I couldn't tell you. But they need to do away with it. You know, and I don't know how the players necessarily, I haven't heard any of the players, to be honest with you, speak out about it, at least the guys in the game, whether they could care or whether it was a big deal to them. But it was bad, okay? It was routinely panned on social media. Anybody who was watching that game hated the uniforms. And I saw a report today already that Nike is already, despite the backlash, despite the vitriol, despite everything that happened over the last 24 hours, Nike is already designing the uniforms for the 2022 All-Star team. It's going to be the same exact thing, whereas the players are not going to be wearing their team uniforms again. And baseball, you know, it's just, it's like they try, you know, it's like they want to be taken seriously. They mean well, you know, good intentions, all those things. And remember, they had a press conference yesterday telling you about things that they want to clean up in the game and things that they want to correct. And, you know, they want to ban the shift. And they want to do away now with the seven-inning doubleheaders moving forward. And no more of this runner on second base to start extra innings, you know, next year. Is they're going to kind of get the game back to where most people are used to experiencing it. So they're open to change. You know, they've been tinkering with things over the last few years in hopes of making the game better. But then you have something like this, which nobody liked, which really kind of just violates tradition, to be perfectly honest with you, and it goes against everything that we grew up watching and really observing and really, you know, kind of storing away as a memory. And now baseball just says, the heck with it. No, we'll take the $1 billion from Nike and let them do whatever the heck they want. It's a bad job. It really and truly is a bad job. You know, That's one where baseball should step in. And look, I know nobody is happy with where they are financially right now in these sports because of everything that happened over the last year, and they had no revenue coming in and so on and so forth. But let's be real. You know, this is one that baseball needs to get back to the fans, get back to the players, and wear the uniforms that we're used to seeing them in instead of just this generic, dull, everyday-looking garbage. You know, awful. Awful. So, to me, that was the negative about the All-Star game. And now, full steam ahead. You know, now we get to embark on the second half of the season. You got two teams in this town that still have seasons and still are very much in the mix right now. Mets in a little bit of position, better position than the Yankees are, of course, because, hey, they're in first place, right? Yankees got their work cut out for them, though. Yankees are in a better division, clearly, but that's not going to make their path to the postseason any easier as well. They're going to have to go out there and earn it. And more importantly, they're going to have to go out there, as we said, and convince Brian Cashman, convince the front office, convince ownership that this is a team that is willing to add to. And this is a team that you're going to go out there and bring in pieces to make their chances of making a postseason push once again that much more favorable. And the next 2 weeks are going to determine all that stuff. The games against the Red Sox, games against Tampa Bay Rays, you're going to know where the Yankees stand here come July 30th, no doubt about it. Mets, on the other hand, just trying to get healthy. And we'll talk about them a little bit more as well as we move forward through the program, maybe what additions we'd like to see them make as they get closer to July 30th, and maybe, just maybe, you know, getting some separation in this National League Eastern Division, which has been underwhelming to say the least. All-Star game, by the way, here's your ratings before we go to the break. 8.237 million viewers last night, which is up ever so slightly from the game in 2019. All right, well, hey, it's going up. You didn't expect it to be a big blockbuster, but still, more people were watching than they were 2 years ago. I think it's a step in the right direction, sign of good things to come. 800-919-ESPN, 800-919-3776. That is the telephone number. As I said, a busy program tonight. We got a lot of things that we got to get to. Also got to talk about the situation involving Richard Sherman. How about that today? That was not something you clearly want to see. And anybody that was kind of holding out hopes that maybe, just maybe, Richard Sherman would be joining his old coach Robert Saleh with the New York Jets and kind of being a veteran mentor to some of them corners that they have in Florham Park, that's not going to be happening anytime soon. And, you know, remains to be seen if it was even close to happening to begin with. Chances weren't all that great. And now when you saw with the arrest that took place here with him in the wee hours of the morning out in Washington State, now he's got to get that thing straightened out and figure out what the next step is there for him before he can worry about getting back to football. Dan Grasso with you here on a Wednesday evening on 98.7 ESPN. We're taking it right up until game number four of the NBA Finals from Milwaukee. Suns with a 2-1 lead in that one, of course. Now, the New York Knicks, goes without saying, made their triumphant return to the postseason this spring. And, hey, I mean, all things considered, had a pretty good year, right? Gave the fans a thrill, took us all for a nice ride, and Garden was rocking, and then unfortunately Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks came in and just dashed whatever dreams we had of maybe taking this run a little bit longer than just the first round here. So you know that it's a busy summer. You know that it's going to be a busy offseason. Now you get to a certain point. How do you get better? How do you build off it? Right? We've talked about it a lot. You can't just run it back with the same group. Now, you're not going to be able to because you got free agents. I mean, that's the nature of professional sports. There are going to be changes to your roster each and every offseason here. But the Knicks in particular. Because, you know, I understand. The season was great. It was a lot of fun. You know, they got home court advantage in the first round. Who would have thought they would have been a top four seed at the beginning of the season? Like, nobody. So they overachieved. And the way that they played against Atlanta in that series, I think that it just validated even more so that they overachieved. You know, this is not what you're going to expect from this team once the season tips off again in October, right? The year's not going to start with people expecting the Knicks to be a top four team in this Eastern Conference. It's not realistic. It's not. You know, Brooklyn's going to be healthy. They're going to be the team to beat. Milwaukee, you might be talking about the NBA champions in this conference. You know, where are they going? Philadelphia, whether they trade Simmons, whether they don't trade Ben Simmons, you know that they're going to get something decent in return. And, oh, by the way, you still got Joel Embiid. They're not going anywhere. Don't you think Atlanta is going to improve upon the season that they had this year? Some other teams that are a little bit further down, you know, what if, you know, Miami actually stays healthy, brings in another piece? Pat Riley always seems to, you know, pull a rabbit out of his hat every so often to make that team better. You know, I think Charlotte's a better basketball team. Indiana's now got a championship coach in Rick Carlisle. Washington has two stars in Westbrook and Beal. You know, Boston still has some high-caliber players led by Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, right? So this East, there's going to be some turnover, I think, from what we saw this past season to when we started again next year. And there's a rumor going, not a rumor, but there's reports that one of the guys the Knicks could be targeting, and there's going to be a lot of teams that are keeping their eye on the situation involving Colin Sexton in Cleveland. Now, Sexton's only 3 years in. Okay, he's 22 years of age. He's what I like to call an ascending player. He's a guy who's gotten better in every season so far that he's been in this league. But he's playing for a team in Cleveland that, you know, frankly, isn't very good. And so maybe his contributions and what he does falls under the radar a little bit. You know, it's easy. But I think he's a guy that can play. And Cleveland, you know, as they continue to rebuild this thing and continue to turn it over, you know, they feel that he might be expendable. Remember, they have a high pick in the draft this year. Maybe they could bring in his eventual replacement. But I think it's also a situation where the Cavs, and you look at them and where they are in their program right now, and they see a guy who's going into the final season of his rookie deal, and they're like, well, you know, we're not close to winning anytime soon. You know, depending on what this is going to cost us, we've seen the player for the last few years. You know, maybe in terms of the system we want to employ, you know, him and Garland in the backcourt, you know, is that really the best, you know, twosome that we can have to play off of each other and things like that? But nevertheless, he's available, and he could be had. So if you're the Knicks, and clearly you need to get another score in here, right? I mean, that's, you know, proved to be their Achilles heel in a big spot. Julius Randle can't do it all by himself. RJ Barrett, not enough to put the team on his backs. You know, and then some of the other players who are hardly those that you can rely on, especially in big game situations, night in and night out. And there's reports that the Knicks have been the most aggressive suitors for Colin Sexton. Take a listen to this from Ian Begley, the putback on SNY.TV.
One source I spoke with downplayed that a little bit, noting that, you know, we're still 2 weeks from the draft, which is likely the time when a trade like this would happen. So there's plenty of time for other teams to get involved. But with the Knicks, you know, it's worth noting that if they traded for Sexton and extended him, they would still be able to use their cap space this summer because they would have Sexton's bird rights. So they'd be able to go over the cap to offer him that big extension. But it's a big bet making this trade for Colin Sexton. The Knicks are interested. I just don't know how strongly they are interested in Sexton at the moment.
Interesting point, though, that Ian brings up. And, you know, Ian, SNY.TV, my buddy, my pal, one of the greats. You know, check him out, his web series, The Putback. Very, very good stuff there for all your Knicks and all your New York basketball, all your basketball needs. They even had me on it once as a guest. How about that? The bird rights are key. So, therefore, you don't have to potentially eat into the cap this season. I think that's an important pull. And remember, Knicks have their own set of free agents they have to deal with, right? Derrick Rose. Well, Peyton's going to be gone. But Derrick Rose, Alec Burks, Bullock, Taj Gibson, Nerlens Noel. You know, you want to bring back a couple of those players. But the question is what is it going to cost you? Because what you had those guys making this past season, you're not going to be able to get them on a hometown discount again for one more go-round. It's just not going to happen. Because those guys went out there and they balled this past year. And they did so for a team that made the playoffs. So those agents are now going to shop their services to other teams around the NBA and say, oh, yeah, well, look at my guy here. He played good as a solid rotational player, and he was part of a winning team. So he should probably be worth more than what you want to pay him or what the Knicks were paying him last year. So the Knicks are going to have to dig a little bit deeper to keep some of those guys back. The Sexton thing, though, like I said, he's a good player. He's a real good scorer. He's still incredibly young, as I said. There's a couple things that concern me about Sexton. And I'd love to hear from you as well at 800-919-ESPN, 800-919-3776. We've seen players over the years, right? They get this label attached to them, good player, bad team, where it's a guy who puts up his numbers, he fills up the box score, but then when you look at the team each and every night, A, they didn't win, and B, when the season is over, they're a far cry from the postseason. But yet they get their numbers every single night. So that maybe enhances their value a little bit. You know, the classic example of that, I'll tell you, it's a guy who's Colin, well, maybe not the classic example, but I'll use him as an example here. Look at one of Colin Sexton's teammates right now in Cleveland with Kevin Love. Kevin Love was a guy who would put up crazy numbers when he came into the league with Minnesota. You know, he'd be a 20-10 machine, you know, probably the best player on the floor wearing a Minnesota uniform during those years. And then when the time came when LeBron and Kyrie needed some help in Cleveland, the question was, well, what happens when he goes there? You know, what happens when he goes to the Cavaliers? Are they really getting themselves a big-time player? Are they getting a guy that's going to, you know, be a true difference maker? And, you know, he's good, but to be a legitimate, like, number three, big-time all-star option, like, he disappeared in some of those games, right? Disappeared. And his numbers took a hit. And that's going to happen when you're playing with other good players like he was in Cleveland. You know, and over time here, over the last few years, I think he's kind of proven himself to be a nice little player, but not a guy who's elite anymore, not a guy that you're going to build around. And I think he got exposed a little bit over time. And that's, you know, that's what always I'm afraid of, especially if you're going to have to pay a hefty premium to bring one of those guys into your program. Now, look, let's establish something right now. If the Knicks are to make a run at Colin Sexton and bring him in, you're not going to have to pay the same price that you would be giving up, let's say, to bring in somebody like Damian Lillard if you were going to make a deal with Portland. Not even close, because Sexton's a good player. He's not, you know, all NBA like Damian Lillard is. We're not talking about one of the top 10 players in the sport here. You know, you hope he grows and continues to get better, but he's clearly not that guy just yet. So there's some pros, there's some cons. I think if you're the Knicks, it is a very, very intriguing possibility for you, especially when you consider what you have in the backcourt to work with now. We'll talk about what that price tag might entail if you were going to talk turkey to make a trade for Sexton. And want to hear from you as well. Want to hear from you regarding the New York Knickerbockers and these rumors tying them potentially to Colin Sexton. And, you know, we just played the clip a little while ago of Ian Begley from SNY kind of maybe throwing a little bit of cold water on these claims that the Knicks have been the most aggressive suitors so far for his services. And Sexton going into the last year of his rookie deal. The other thing that ties the Knicks to Colin Sexton is that Brock Aller, who is in the Knicks front office and, you know, started in Cleveland, not started in Cleveland, but he was in Cleveland before he went to New York. He was there when Colin Sexton was drafted, you know, spent a couple of seasons or the first two seasons of Colin Sexton's career, knowing his ins and outs, knowing his strengths, knowing his weaknesses, knowing all about his game. So that to me would kind of be like the recommendation that I would need that, okay, if the Knicks really are kind of kicking the tires on him, maybe it's valid and at least comes with some merit because you have a guy in your front office that knows a lot about this player. You're not going into this thing cold. You're not going based off of what you see on tape and the film. And, you know, you have somebody with firsthand experience. He's a CAA guy, you know, Leon Rose with that connection, so on and so forth. So there are some things that naturally tie the Knicks to Sexton in this situation. But you have to weigh the pros and cons, right? You're talking about a guy who, for the most part, is, look, he's a ball-dominant guard. That's what he is. Do you really want to add another one of those guys to your team? You know, when you think about an Emmanuel Quickley, it's the same thing. Can you envision Quickley and Sexton in the backcourt at the same time for long stretches? Is that going to do wonders for the type of basketball that Tom Thibodeau wants to play? I think that is something that has to certainly be addressed, and you know that it's probably been hammered out already behind closed doors, at least with the brass of the organization. The other problem, and I bring up Thibodeau's name again here, is that Colin Sexton, despite the fact that he's very good at scoring the ball and he's very good offensively, the problem is that, you know, he is not exactly known as a defensive virtuoso. And I don't think it takes a genius to figure out that if you want to play for this team and if you want to play specifically for Tom Thibodeau, you got to be able to cut it on the defensive end of the floor, right? You got to be able to make some stops. You have to buy in to the defense or else there's not going to be any playing time for you. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. Now, I don't think he's a max player. Like, I don't think you're talking about a guy that you'd give max money to. At least I wouldn't at this stage, right? But as we talked about before with the bird rights, whatever deal that you do strike with him, if you do give him a contract extension, and look, I don't know at this point why you, if you're going to trade for a player like that, you're going to give him a contract. At this stage, though, the deal would not kick in until next season. So it's not going to necessarily do much for your cap coming up this year, so you keep that space to a certain degree. Now, what about the package? You know, what is it going to take? Forget about R.J. Barrett. You're not going to have to part ways with R.J. Barrett because, again, you're not giving up to get Damian Lillard, as I said. This is Colin Sexton. Nice player, not to the caliber, though, of Dame Lillard. Easily. You pick 19th in the first round. You probably got to say goodbye to the 19th pick for sure. You willing to do that? Remember, the 19th pick of the draft is a crapshoot to be. Hey, I mean, the way things have been going, top five picks are crapshoots, as we've seen. Right? Lottery picks are crapshoots. But parting ways with the 19th pick, if you're the Knicks, and, you know, they're probably going to ask for somebody like Obi Toppin, a guy who you just brought into the program a year ago, a guy who hasn't even begun to round into the type of player that you hope he's going to be. Right? Local product, guy who loves every minute of being a Knick, grew up a Knick fan, and look, he maybe didn't necessarily make the initial impact in his rookie season that you would have hoped, that you would have thought, but how do you know you're not pulling the plug too soon? Because say what you want about Obi Toppin, you know, when they put him in at times during the Atlanta series, I thought you got good minutes. I thought you got a nice lift. He gave you that burst of energy. You know, and that's not what ultimately you hope he becomes, like not just an energy or a spurt guy. You want him to be a consistent, hopefully two-way dominant player for you. You hope, but that's not a guarantee that he's ever going to blossom into that. But there's still room to grow for his game, definitely. The question you have to ask yourself, though, if you're the Knicks, is now the time to pull the plug already? You know, and I know some people that probably say, yeah, why not? Let's roll the dice. But others say, no, I want to see what we have in Obi Toppin. You know, and for a guy in Sexton who, as I said, how do we know that he's going to be able to fit in to a program that you hope becomes a winning program? A program that at least under this regime and this head coach for one season was a winning program. So that's what we're basing this off of. Right? We're just going by what the resume says. And what the resume says is that Leon Rose, Tom Thibodeau, year number one, playoffs, four seed in the Eastern Conference, even though that isn't assured moving forward. Let's keep hammering that home so we don't get crazy. But this is a winning program. And you know that there's going to be other players around the league that probably would want to be part of this program. So it's not like you have to necessarily sell out just to get this guy because, well, your options are limited. No, I mean, who's to say that some, and I keep bringing this up because, like, this is the way the NBA is right now. You know, your best bet to build your basketball team, it's not even necessarily taking your shot in free agency. It's not even necessarily, and I know that this is kind of like the old school approach, but draft and develop and that sort of thing. The draft is a crapshoot, as I just got done saying. You don't know if you're going to get lucky enough to be able to draft that next NBA superstar. But the avenue that could provide the most fruit for you and could pay the most dividends is the trade front when you're talking about an established superstar who is disgruntled on another team. And you know it and I know it. Give it time when you're talking about the NBA, right? Give it another month. As we get closer to the start of the season, as we get closer to the start of training camp, there's going to be a guy that you're going to hear about. It's like, oh, you know what? He hates his team. He hates his coach. He wants to be traded. He doesn't want to play with this team anymore. He doesn't think that the window is there any longer to win a championship with this team. And after all these years, he's grown tired of it and he wants out. That's the best way to build your team, because at least you know what you're getting. You know, if you really go all in and get that star player, you know what you're getting in return. And that way, you don't necessarily mind giving up a heavy price. And not to say that Lillard fits into that category, but it's kind of along those lines. That's like the closest thing that we have to it right now in the NBA. So what do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Worth pursuing? Does it make the Knicks that much better? You know, if you're talking about Obi Toppin in the 19th pick of the draft, that's not depleting your organization, right? You know, I don't even think that, I mean, do you even consider Obi Toppin a core player right now? Like, I mean, he wasn't in 1 year, not that you necessarily expected him to be. I think maybe we hoped for a little bit more in year one, but you did draft him in the first round with hopes and aspirations that he would grow into that player, but right now, I mean, if we had a game tomorrow or a game next week, I mean, he's not going to be a guy that you're heavily relying upon. And coming into the season next year, are you, like, relying on him to step into the starting lineup in year number two? Not necessarily. You want him to just be, I think, a competent rotational player for you in his second year and then continue to get better and better and better. But what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't, and what if you had the opportunity to get a guy, and what if his game continues to grow? Because say the one thing about Sexton. Okay, in 3 years, he's gotten better and better and better. And what is his ceiling? What if it's even higher? And then some other team that the Knicks are going to have to battle it out with in the Eastern Conference is going to be the beneficiaries of acquiring a guy like this, and then we're going to be left sitting here saying, oh, woulda, coulda, shoulda, why didn't we get him when we had our chance? Dan Grasso hanging with you here on 98.7 ESPN. Taking it right up until 9 o'clock. Then it's game four of the NBA Finals, Milwaukee and Phoenix, as the home team sees if they can knot things up at two games apiece. Don't forget, you can get me on Twitter at Dan Grasso, G-R-A-C-A. Talking Knicks, talking the prospects of a Colin Sexton trade should the Cavaliers decide to move him a year before his contract is up. Let's say hi to Josh. He is in State College. He's going to start us off here on 98.7. Josh, how are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
Good, Josh. What's going on, my friend?
So in terms of a potential return for Sexton, let's say it was Toppin and the 19th pick, I'm fine with that from a package perspective. I don't think you're giving up too much. I think it's still kind of two lottery tickets. The thing that I would be concerned about is, let's say you give Randall a max extension. Let's say you extend Sexton, maybe not even a max. Mm-hmm. You have 2 years down the road. Hopefully, if Barrett continues to develop, you're going to have to extend him. So that would be your very expensive core of three. And I know the Knicks can't look around at other teams and say, well, how does that stack up against this? How does that stack up against that? But as a fan, I would look at Atlanta, what Charlotte is building, the Nets, the Sixers, what are the Bucks going to do? And as a fan, I'm thinking, man, you know, is that threesome going to develop into a core that I think can win the East? And that's where I'm a little more hesitant. Again, I'm fine with that as a potential package to get him, but that's the thing that I'm getting caught up on is that my expensive core to get me out of the East? And I just don't know.
Well, let's put it in other terms, Josh, and everything you said is valid, okay? Let's just say, let's for argument's sake, your top three are Randall, Barrett, and Sexton. Okay, at least for next season. Let's just say we're going into next year. Those are your top three. Let's say you get Randall better than he was in the playoffs, not as good as he was during the regular season this year. Okay, where he was a top 10 player in the NBA during the season. So let's say you get like an in-between version of Julius Randall, which is still good, but not elite like he was last year at times, okay? Let's say R.J. Barrett takes another step, but he's still maybe not where you want him to be in year number three. And then you get Colin Sexton like you've seen Colin Sexton so far here with the Cavaliers. You know, he's a guy who's going to average maybe, you know, 20 a game, somewhere around there. You know, he's going to dominate the ball offensively. And then, as we said, he's got liabilities on the defensive side of the ball. If that is your main production from those three guys, realistically, where does this Knicks team fall in the Eastern Conference then? Have they gotten better?
They've gotten better, but I think their ceiling is still the four seed. Brooklyn's going to be better. I think Philly, even if, let's say, they keep Simmons, I don't think the strategies used against him are conducive in the regular season. So Philly's better. Milwaukee's better. And then if this is the real Atlanta, Atlanta's better. If not, then I think that team is still on par with them. So for next year, your ceiling is still a four, and you hope you draw a favorable matchup in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, that's what I'm saying. I think, and thank you for the phone call. I think you have to keep the bigger picture in mind, and that's how I'm looking at it. Because, look, the Randall variable is just that. Meaning, what happens if he doesn't bounce back from how he played in the postseason? Like, everything is great now. And, like, the overriding big picture with Julius Randle when we're talking about him is the guy that we saw for the majority of this past season, which was outstanding for 72 games in the regular campaign, and then you had the drop-off in the postseason. Well, what happens if we don't see regular season Julius Randle again? Like, what happens? What if he peaked? What if he peaked? And you know what? I'm not going to sit here and say that that's an impossibility. It might have been the case. Right? And I know the playoffs, there's a small sample size. It was five games. So am I really going to put more weight in five versus 72? No, but you were playing good competition for those five games. You were playing a better team than you had. And you were playing another team that this is like, it was kind of like a lesson up close and personal, is that you were playing a better team that also had that number one legit star, right? In Trae Young. And the Knicks came out of that series and realized, shoot, I don't think we have that guy. You know, think about how Atlanta goes into next season and think about how the Knicks go into next season. Like, in terms of how they feel. Hawks are going into next season knowing that they've got their franchise player. They've got the guy they are building around. Now, how do we get Trae Young help? Knicks, if they go into this with the right mind, they probably have to be honest with themselves and say, we don't have that guy yet. You know, in a perfect world, if it works itself out that way and, you know, Randle is outstanding again, and if the Knicks make the playoffs again, he turns it around and is a big-time player in the playoffs for them, then you could start to think, all right, well, you know, now we got something to build with. If RJ continues to get better and better and he takes maybe two giant steps forward this year, you're like, okay, we're headed in the right direction. But now it's a very slippery slope, I think, for the front office, because not only do you have to worry about staying on the level that you're at now, but you also have to do it and think about making moves without knowing what you have 2 years from now, right? Because, like, if Julius Randle goes out and struggles this year, you're not giving him a long-term, like, big-time money contract. You're going to say, you know what, thanks for the memories. Goodbye. You know, we'll always have 2021. We'll always have that pandemic season when he had a really, really good year. And the fans at the Garden were chanting MVP when they were allowed back in. Right? That's what we're going to have. And then it's, all right, I guess we're on the search for another player. Trades, as I keep saying, the trade route is still the preferred way to go, in my opinion, if you're talking about bringing in the guy who is truly going to transform the fortunes of this basketball team. John is in Freehold. He's up next here on 98.7 ESPN. Johnny, how are you?
Hey, how we doing, Dan? Good evening.
John, how's things?
Dan, it's going well, Dan. You know I'm a huge Knickerbocker fan. When I look at this Colin Sexton trade, I'm not sold on it, to be quite honest with you, Dan. I look at him as an undersized combo guard who hasn't proven that he can lead a team. He didn't really embrace that lead guard role in Cleveland. I didn't see him, you know, enhance the talent around him any better. Garland was more of their ball-handling setup man. And that would bother me because this team needs a lead guard. They don't need a combo guard. Quickley's a combo guard, and I don't think Quickley's a starting player in the league. I think Quickley's more of an instant offense kind of guy off your bench along the lines of a Jamal Crawford or a Lou Williams. But what I'm doing is I'm getting in contact with OKC and Sam Presti, and I want more height. I want more length. I want more versatility out of my lead guard. and I'm going after Shane Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he's a guy that's really on the rise. He's gotten better every year. He brings more height, more length, more athleticism. He's much better defensively right here, right now, before even getting under Tom Thibodeau's wing in the Knick organization. And he can score in a variety of different ways. And I think he's more versatile and he's more battle-tested and more ready. I've seen more out of him as far as a lead guard, setting people up and making people better around him. And that's what this Knick team needs going forward. When you're trying to put together a championship basketball team, I don't think Colin Sexton's that guy. I just don't. I think he's undersized, like I said. He's a combo guard. He's a volume scorer. He's ball dominant. I'm not looking for that. I need a guy that gives me more versatility and more impact at that position. And that's why I'm going after Shane Gilgeous-Alexander. I'll give them an extra first-round pick. We talked about the package that would be offered for Colin Sexton. I'd add another first-round pick into that trade and enhance it, sweeten the pot, so to speak. And I'm going to bring in a better player with a bigger upside than Shane Gilgeous-Alexander. That's the route I'm going to go, and I'm going to add some more shooting to this team. And you just mentioned Julius Randle. I'm not sold on Randle. I got to tell you, I'm not giving him a long-term contract right now. This is a show-me year. You know, that could have been a flash in the pan a year ago. I don't know. His career has been up and down. He's been inconsistent. His first year with the Knicks was horrendous, as you know. I want to see more. He's got to prove it to me. So I'm not giving up any money. I'm not, you know, choking myself from a salary cap standpoint regarding Julius Randle. And everybody's on the table and everybody's available to make this basketball team better. If I can include Julius Randle in a package to make myself better, to improve the overall talent of this team and put this team in a positive direction going forward to build it into a champion, I'm going to do it. I just am. I mean, that's the smart thing to do. You got to be smart, selective, and open-minded when you're talking about building this basketball team out into a champion.
Well, and John, the thing is, and good phone call. You hit on a lot of good points there. You know, the thing is, look, the Knicks aren't there yet. And I think the front office knows that. I think they know this. Now, Gilgeous-Alexander, okay, much like Sexton, he's going into the last year of his rookie deal, okay, first and foremost. Oklahoma City, where they are right now as a program, remember, they have about 93 gazillion draft choices over the next few years. You know, they're going to, like, own the draft because that's what Sam Presti decided to do out there. You know, and all the trades that he made, he loaded up on draft choices because, you know, the best part about it is, too, it kind of buys him a little bit more time. Think about it. You know, it's like you could sell that to ownership and say, I'm going to keep my job because I got all these draft choices and give me the opportunity to build this thing. Now, Gilgeous-Alexander, he's a little bit more seasoned than Colin Sexton. What I mean by that is, you know, you're talking about a guy who's got playoff experience, right? He's been in the postseason before. First with the Clippers, and then the 1 year with Oklahoma. Remember, he played alongside Chris Paul when Chris Paul was in OKC last year, down in the bubble. So he's been in the playoffs there. He had the 1 year with the Clippers as a rookie. So he's got a little bit more, you know, seasoned, big game experience than, let's say, Sexton has. I don't think that's the worst move in the world. I really and truly don't. But remember something about Gilgeous-Alexander. He's also a guy that started to get more of an opportunity to score and to become more of that guy when he was on an absolutely dreadful basketball team. Because that's what Oklahoma City was this year, right? They're rebuilding. They were, for my money, they were tanking down the stretch. I mean, there's no other way around it. Remember, that's one of the they basically were telling him not to play at the end of the year because they wanted to get as best a pick as possible. Time right now, though, for the Truly Hard Play of the Game, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. And we'll rewind to last night, the All-Star Game, and the MVP stole the show.
Swing and a high drive, deep left field, way back and out of here. An absolute no-doubter to left for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Crushed it. 468 feet later, and he's flexing, pointing to his bicep as he goes past Tatis and takes his time around the bases.
Boog Shambi there on ESPN Radio, and Corbin Burns probably couldn't wait to get back to Milwaukee after that one. He's like, get me out of this thin air, get me out of facing these hitters. The Milwaukee pitcher who was on the receiving end of that Vlad Jr. blast, helping the American League win the game, and he won the MVP award. That's the Truly Hard Play of the Game, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, please drink responsibly. Before we get back to the phones, we're talking Mets. I'll give you my first half awards for the team here. MVP, without much surprise, it's got to be Jacob DeGrom. There was nobody else. The runner-up for the MVP, I will say Taijuan Walker, another starting pitcher. The starting pitching has fueled this team, and Walker, for a guy that, you know, they signed in February, and give him credit, it was a multi-year deal too, not one of these one-year flyers and, you know, a prove-it deal or anything like that. No, they have Walker locked up now for another couple of seasons, which is a very, very shrewd move by that front office, and he has been outstanding, and I'm glad that he was honored with an all-star bid. Very, very deserving. He's been, you know, like I said, he has been the Mets MVP this year for anybody not named Jacob DeGrom, and you hope to get more of that from Taijuan Walker heading into the second half of this season here. The anti-MVP, I mean, can it be anybody else but Francisco Lindor, right? I mean, it has to be him. You know, he's picked it up a little bit better in the last 30 days or so, but, I mean, what the expectations were, what you gave up to get him, what you're paying him in $341 million. You know, it wasn't long ago this guy was thought of as one of the top 10 players in the sport, in the entire sport. And now to see him performing like he has, and especially, you know, that first couple of months, which were just, I mean, he was as bad as any player that there was in the league. That's how bad he was. There could be no other choice but him. Runner-up as the anti-MVP, I will say Michael Conforto. Yeah, he's been injured a little bit, but you know what? Even when he's been playing, he hasn't been very good. I mentioned the fact, you know, like on Sunday, in the home run that he hit in the game against Pittsburgh, you know, the way they were, like, mobbing him, I mean, you almost felt bad for the guy. He almost, like, turned into a charity case. Like, he hit a home run. Isn't that cute? No, this is a guy who's in his walk year, and he thought he was going to be in line for a huge big-money contract. And the way that he's gone out there and performed this year, that is not the way you go about getting all those riches. So those are two guys that have to turn the season around if the Mets are going to make some noise, not just getting to the postseason, but then once they get into October against good competition. Biggest surprise, I'm going to say Taijuan Walker again. I don't want to, you know, double up on these awards. That's not fair, but I think that Walker fits the bill. You know, I don't know how many of us thought that he would be able to deliver to this extent for this rotation. I think, remember, when they signed him, he was a guy that was going to be thought of as maybe your fourth or fifth starter. And right now he's your number two. And you feel good about him being your number two. So he is your biggest surprise, and it's been a pleasant surprise, once again, with Walker. Runner-up is big surprise. I'm going to have co-runners-up. One, Jonathan VR, a guy who they signed to be a utility player. You know, play around the infield, play a little second, play a little third, you know, that sort of thing. And the guy's been thrust into almost becoming an everyday player for them because of the J.D. Davis injury and then when McNeil was out. And, you know, VR has played good defense. He's gotten big hits. He has helped hold the fort down. And, you know, who knows if the Mets are even in first place without a guy like Jonathan VR at this point. My other co-runner-up, and we talked about him with Anthony a little bit, Tyler McGill. You know, I know he's only made four starts, but the four starts have been very good. And not that you're expecting, you know, Cy Young stuff every time he goes out there, but if he could just go out there and give you a quality performance each and every time out, I mean, it seems like he strikes out at least seven guys every appearance. Mets will take that, especially given the pieces that they're missing in that starting rotation. So McGill and VR, the co-runners up there for big surprise. Biggest disappointment, I say Dom Smith. This is a guy who got MVP votes last year in the National League. And he just hasn't been the same player this year, especially with the bat. You expected so much more for him, and he just hasn't been able to put it together yet here this season. He's another guy you hope turns it around. It'll make this team that much better. Runner-up for biggest disappointment, I say David Peterson. He's on the shelf right now with the oblique injury, but he looked really good as a rookie. You know, he was, you know, a firm middle-of-the-rotation guy you could count on last year, albeit a 60-game season, but he had that poise. He looked like a veteran every time he stepped out on that mound, and he expected him to kind of build off of that this year. And for the most part, he hasn't been very good. So he is the runner-up there for biggest disappointment. Taking it for another 20 minutes or so. Then we'll send it out to Milwaukee for Game 4 of the NBA Finals between the Bucks and the Suns. Thanks to Brendan Cuddy of NJ.com hopping on the program tonight, talking a little Yankees. Real quick to finish on the Yankees here. First half awards for them, like we did with the Mets earlier in the show. MVP has got to be Aaron Judge, right? had a great year, having a great year, and he's got to lead the way for this group while the other guys still try to figure things out, at least offensively. Judge is the MVP. Runner-up is Gerrit Cole. You know, aside from those two hiccups he had in the Boston start and the Mets start, you know, by and large, he's still been very, very good, certainly outperforming everybody else in a Yankee uniform. So Cole is the runner-up MVP in the first half. The anti-MVP, which is weird to say because the guy made the All-Star team, even though I don't know how he did, but Aroldis Chapman's the anti-MVP. The run that he has been on for the last month, or the lack thereof, to the point where now you can't even trust him in virtually any situation, given the fact that Aaron Boone didn't even call his number on Sunday while that game was burning to the ground in the ninth inning. I think he has sewn up this award here as the anti-MVP. Gleyber Torres gave him a good run, though, so he's going to be my runner-up as the anti-MVP. And the fact that, aside from just, like, brief spurts, you know, what has happened to Gleyber Torres? What has happened to a guy who a couple of years ago you thought was going to be competing to win MVP awards throughout his career? And now you're talking about somebody who you're seriously questioning about his long-term future with this team and to whether or not he really has a long-term future with this team. And I didn't think that we'd be saying that in a million years. You know, last year he had a horrible season in the 60-game campaign. Cashman came out afterwards and said he showed up to summer camp out of shape, you know, after everything got shut down for 4 months, that he didn't come really prepared for the second go-round, and it had that trickle-down effect throughout the season to where he never really got his game on track. Well, now he came back here for another full season where everything is on schedule and everything is normal, and he still hasn't been able to kick it into high gear. So that is a huge, huge point of concern if you ask me, if the New York Yankees. Biggest surprise. Biggest surprise, you know what? I'm going to say Jonathan Loaisiga, as a matter of fact. Not that, you know, he's performing at a very capable level, but he's even gotten better here. You know, and that's what I admire about a guy like Loaisiga, who was kind of that swing guy for the first couple of seasons, you know, whether it was making a spot start every now and then, coming out of the bullpen, and now he's really settled in nicely to this role out of the pen, and he's been one of their more trusted relief pitchers, certainly this season. Probably their most trusted relief pitcher. You know, you can make the case overall. If him, you know, then Chad Green, up until Sunday, of course. But he's been very, very good, and so he's the biggest surprise. And the runner-up, another guy, you know, Nestor Cortes. You know, who thought that he was going to be an option? Whether it's a couple of starts he had to make out of the blue, which he came through, the job he's done, you know, in relief this year. So those two guys, you know, Loaisiga, Cortes, those are the two big surprises for me here with this Yankee team, and certainly of the pleasant variety. Biggest disappointments, two guys. I'm going to have to say Clint Frazier is the biggest disappointment. And I know he's hurt right now, so it's not like I'm piling on. I don't want to kick a guy when he's down. But Clint Frazier was a guy who finally, right, we were told he seized the left fielder job. He got it. It was his. He was the left fielder for the New York Yankees. Finally going to be his time. And he just hasn't been able to put it together. And it's got nothing to do with him being hurt. You know, he wasn't very good even when he was healthy. So he's the biggest disappointment for me. And the runner-up, a couple of different, you know, I could have sat here and piled on Aaron Hicks and the fact that the guy's never healthy, but I don't want to kick a guy when he's down there. And, you know, Hicks, look, I mean, they swung and missed on that one. They did. You know, they thought he was going to be a perfect player for Yankee Stadium. Cashman loved him. You know, they signed him to that contract. The guy's always hurt. The guy's always hurt. But to me, the biggest disappointment is DJ LeMahieu. And, you know, the reason I say that is because, much like Gleyber Torres, but maybe even more, you're talking about a guy in LeMahieu who was in the MVP conversation last year. And his first couple of years in New York, he was one of the best players in the game, right? I mean, this guy was playing at an unbelievably high level. You know, batting champion. It looked like, boy, they really pulled a fast one on Colorado. Or, I mean, what the hell was Colorado thinking, not even bringing this guy back? And they just let him walk for nothing, right? And, you know, he held out during the offseason, didn't sign until later on in the process, and he and the Yanks finally came to an agreement. I don't know if that kind of threw off his routine a little bit. And I know that he's kind of tried to snap out of it of late, and he's performed better here more recently. But he's still a far cry from the guy that we know and from the guy that we saw the last couple of seasons. You know, I mean, he's hitting almost 100 points less than he did last year. Now, I know it was only a 60-game season, but DJ LeMahieu is, you know, one of your two best hitters when things are going right for this team. And he has got to pick it up if this Yankee team is going to be able to turn it around here in the second half of the season. So he's my runner-up for biggest disappointment for the New York Yankees. It'll be DJ LeMahieu.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.